Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Patterson. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. This week, I find myself at Everest Base Camp. Pretty exciting. We're going to speak to a collection of my fellow climbers here in a few minutes, but I just want to remind everybody that if you want to find out real time what's going on, we're now the first week of May. You can go to my website at www.markpattisonnfl.com. You can follow the journey, not only on the Garmin app, which is attached to that. You can follow us literally going up and down the mountain, but you can also see my blog there. I'm writing almost every other day about what is actually happening here in camp. And as always, please remember to go and check out my philanthropy, Millie's Everest, the Lochi Challenge. We've raised over $56,000 so far. Very inspired by my daughter, Amelia, who has epilepsy. And I have a partner with an organization in Sun Valley called Higher Ground, and they have really helped accelerate and support the journey today. Okay, let's get going. Again, I'm here at Everest Base Camp, and I wanted to introduce one of my fellow climbers. He's pretty remarkable. His name is Art Muir. Art, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Good
so,
to be here.
Yeah, you know, so the first thing that comes across my mind is there's no relation to the famous John Muir that crossed,
the United States. I'd like to claim the relationship, but it's not the case. It's not the case.
So one of the things I've been most impressed with so far about you is, number one, you're 75 years old. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you might become potentially the oldest American to actually pull this thing off. But more than that is that you've got such a great zest for life. And it really does inspire me. There's another guy, Lou Whitaker, that inspired me to actually move to Sun Valley. Yeah. And when I met him, he was 89 years old. And, and I ran over to him. I reached out.
Chopping wood at the time?
He was he spun
taking
around.
Taking out a barn or something?
The guy, when I grabbed him by the arm, he just literally spun around. Right. It was like I was grabbing a piece of wood.
Yeah,
and he was,
I know.
Like, I want to be this guy someday. And his life is so full of adventure. You live in Chicago now. You're originally from Colorado.
Right.
Like, where and when did you start getting into climbing?
Yeah, the fact is, this is more of a recent kind of interest for me. I started out in Colorado doing a little bit of climbing, a little bit of camping with some of my friends. But then I went to school in Philadelphia and hadn't done it for a long time. Was in the Army, went back to school, started working, had a family. But I have a friend, a guy named Jim Daverman, who actually has a house in Sun Valley as well. And he decided he wanted to do some climbing. He was out in Sun Valley doing some work with a guide out there named Drew Daly. Really, Sawtooth Mountain guide, really good guy. And Jim decided he wanted to go down to Ecuador and do some climbing, some volcanoes. So he asked me to come along because he'd known I'd done some of this stuff. And I said, sure. And I applied, I applied for this, I sent in the application. And I expected them to ask me some questions like, what have you climbed recently? How many nights you've been in a sleeping bag? They didn't ask me anything. So I figured, how hard could this be? Do they know that I think I was 69 at the time or something maybe? I figured this can't be that hard. You just go down there, cruise around in the Andes for a little while, have some, good food. So I got down there. We had a guide. Our lead guide was with RMI, was Casey Grom, well-known guide, Solvay Waterfall. We got down there and we were climbing these two volcanoes, Cayambe and Cotopaxi. We did a little training. We got out. And so you start in the middle of the night, often to get up, be on top kind of when the sun comes up. And it's a volcano. So it's 45 degrees. Which I knew intellectually, but emotionally, physically, I'm walking up this thing thinking, man, this is like really hard. I don't know, what am I doing here? But we were able to summit Cayambe in really high winds, then had a really nice day on Cotopaxi. And so I kind of got hooked. And I also saw how professional mountain guides work, how they manage people. I'd never really used guides before, so I hadn't done any of this stuff. And so from there, I just started doing more trips. And so I did more with RMI, and I was really lucky. My son, who at the time was 25, I think Charlie was 25 or 26, he'd gone out to Mount Rainier, done a course taking the Couts Ice Cool Water course, and came home and said, you know, Dad, we should, actually what he said is, Dad, you should climb Denali. And I'd actually been there once in, with some a real small group in 1991. And so I said, you know, Charlie, man, I'm too old. He said, no, come on, we can do this, we can do this. So we went to Denali with Billy Nugent was the guide who led our trip. Mike King, Sean Collin was were the other guides. It was an RMI trip. And after much hard work and amazing views and trials and tribulations, I stood on the top of Denali with my son, which is, I think was one of the most amazing days of my entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, people say that the birth of your children is really neat, but the truth is that walking daughters down the aisle and standing on top of a big mountain with your son, those are the best.
It's pretty cool. It's not a trivial mountain either.
The thing about that was it taught him something really important. He was young at the time, but it taught him about how he could call on deep resources within himself in really hard times and push through.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a time in his life when he's going to need that, but he has that knowledge now. So that was really a special deal.
Well, that's also, one of the reasons why we call this podcast, Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way and being very metaphorical. You know, when you climb up a mountain, as you know, you're overcoming a lot of things, a lot of personal grit, a lot of things you've been going through. And so, it's such a great life lesson to have to overcome hard things, because at the end of the day, hard things are hard, right?
Yeah, that's why they call them hard, right?
Yeah, that's why they call them hard. But it makes you a better person for, pushing yourself around. Let me ask you this question. So today I'm doing more of a collage of podcasts with different members of our group.
Right.
And each one is going to come from a different...
And that's a remarkable team, too.
We're very fortunate to have, because you've been on probably bad teams and I've been on bad teams.
No, actually, most of my teams, I've, really... really been lucky. They've been great people.
Well, I've had a couple that have been better than others. I'll put it that way. Yeah. Right. But, so at the end of the day, why are you here on Everest? What is it about Everest that's calling your name?
Well, a couple things. One is, you talk about this, about the summit and what I've learned in getting ready for these trips, because you have to work really hard. There's a lot of preparation. And for me, I've actually been given an opportunity to give a couple lectures and I kind of named them. It's not about success, or it's not about the summit. It's about the effort. So it's about this effort that you go through. So you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about other people. You share this bond. When you've done something really hard, there's a bond. I mean, soldiers know it. Other people who've gone through ordeals know it.
Football teams. Right?
Yeah, and football teams, it's exactly the same thing. It's something really special. But what happened to me was I was born in 1946. In 1950, Maurice Herzog and other French climbers climbed Annapurna, the first 8,000-meter peak. And he wrote the book. He wrote his book, Annapurna, in 1953. I think my dad gave it to me about 3 years later, maybe 1956. So I was maybe 10 years old. And then just the concept of the incredible, the adventure, the passion, the work, the danger. I had all that frostbite and all those things. Yeah. It was with Lionel Terray and Louis Achenal and these guys, these major guys. So I've always had an interest in doing it, but never an opportunity. So when I realized that with guides, I could pursue something as an ordinary person that was extraordinary, I kind of moved my way up to do this. Now, for me, one of the things that you don't know is that I was here in 2019. In 2019, it only got to Camp 2. So this time, for me, success is getting anywhere above Camp 2.
Mm.
Anything beyond that is gravy. And I'm old enough now that it's more about the trip, the companionship, the preparation. In fact, I've been preparing for this for so long that I thought that was the event.
Yeah.
I've kind of forgotten. Wait, now you got to go climb the mountain.
Yeah.
So,
I want to jump on that point really quick let me just say this, because I think this is one of the things that's the most important things about when you go after some big ass goal, right?
Exactly right.
It's loving that process. So even though you've been chasing this thing for a long time, It's about you getting up every single day, doing your push-ups, doing whatever you have to do to get ready for this big event.
I told my kids, I have three kids, you know, this lovely woman I married, you know, I can't get married above myself, of course. And we have three wonderful children.
We call that you outkicked your coverage.
Right? Yeah, I did. I actually did. But I've told them that, you know, it's really important in life to have dreams. Because it's not important necessarily that you achieve the dream. It's important that you work toward a goal. So once you achieve, you have a dream out there, then you can take the small steps to work toward it. And you'll end up going much farther than you would ever imagine. But if you don't start, you won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's what it's been really important to
me. Yeah, you know, when you say that, it's something I say quite a bit, which is action creates reaction.
Exactly right.
And so that you took, and it's interesting because you were talking about your dad giving you a book, you know, about the Annapurna trip and all that stuff. I was super inspired by the Whitaker brothers, Jim and Lou.
Yeah.
Veesters, Wickwire, all those guys, Addicted to Danger, you know, all those books, all those adventures, because I happen to grow up, ironically, in the great state of Washington. One of my fellow climbers down the road here, Andrew Hughes, he's giving us a shout out over there. He's been on the pod. He's up here as well. But, you know, when you're so influenced by either people or events, and I think we all need to have mentors like that. And even though I don't think you see yourself necessarily like this because you're one of the guys, you are a mentor to a lot of people. Because of, you know, you retired as a lawyer, and rather than pack it in and go to Palm Desert and play golf, you're like, you know what, I'm not doing that. Because all your buddies are passing away or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
You're going to go, you know, like, get after life.
Life and that's is really short. It's really precious. And the other thing is, you know, you don't really know how deep the water is until you jump in. And it's okay. It's okay to try something and fail. I mean, that's, you know, but it's not okay not to try something.
Yeah.
And life is such a precious, fleeting gift. That you need to take advantage of it. And you don't really typically fully realize that until you're almost too old. You know, so that's why it's, you know, it's so this has been, for me, it's been great. It's also been the process of the training. Because it's remarkable, you know, that somebody, you know, my age, not athletic, just a normal person, could actually prepare for and be in a position to at least think about doing this, whether the success comes. I mean, you know, our bodies are remarkable. They're miraculous, actually, that you could do it at this age. So I'm pretty fortunate.
I think one of the things that I've seen is that your body can be like a car. And if your car just sits in the garage and you've got this beautiful Ferrari or something, old antique, at the end of the day, if you don't put oil, do all these things
lubricate
you have to do.
Lubricate the joints a little bit.
It's the same thing as a human. I mean, people can go a long way if they want to go a long way, but if you just sit, you get archaic and crickety. Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's just so much fun. The people I've met, one of the other climbers I think you were going to talk to is this fellow from Nova Scotia that I've gotten to know in some other climbs, and we've become really good friends, and that's what happens on these trips because you've done something really difficult.
Yeah. So as we transition this into Kevin, and for everybody that's listening, you know, this we're here at Everest Base Camp. This will come out around the first week of May, and we are now doing rotations up and down and up and down.
By then,
one of the things that's been so wonderful to me, not just with this expedition, but all the other ones, is meeting this whole international community of people.
Yeah.
And so you and I are both from the States. You know, I hail from the great state of Washington, and you're from Colorado originally. And now we're going to bounce into another fellow climber, Kevin Walsh, who comes from Nova Scotia. So first of all, let me
give him some room. I'll jump out of the chair. He can jump into the hot seat. Okay.
I appreciate it very much, Art. Thank you.
It's been a privilege. Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Kevin, how you doing? You're snoozing or something, so we had to bump Art into the first position.
No worries. Yeah, you have to listen to the body, and felt like I needed a little rest and rejuvenate, but I feel like $1 million again.
It's all good at the end of the day. So as we were just talking about, you know, and I asked this question rather stupidly the other day, and you were very generous and nice to me to not make me feel like an idiot. But I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure Nova Scotia is up in Canada. It's kind of up on the far eastern seaboard there. Tell me about Nova Scotia, because I'm trying to understand how you, hailing from the great country of Canada and being from the province of Nova Scotia, how you even got into climbing.
Right. Yeah. No, great question, Mark. I was born in Nova Scotia in 1965, a small province on the eastern coast of Canada. We have a population of around 1 million people. Not a lot of vertical out there, though. So I was lucky enough to grow up in with a father who was in the military, and we lived in the Alps, near the Alps, for about 7 years. So my love for the mountains began there, did a lot of trekking, hiking. As I got older, the challenges, the bar raised, I wanted to go higher.
Yeah.
I saw guys coming down from the Matterhorn once with all the carabiners and the gear, and I'm like, that looks like something that I'd like to try someday. So here we are.
So where did your career start? I know you're a dentist, you know, as a full-time, and you're a great dad, and you've got some kids and things like that. But where did you, like this bug, where you actually started doing it, you transitioned from, hey, that looks really cool, with a bunch of carabiners, with some dudes coming down the mountain, they look awesome, to you actually doing those types of things?
Yeah, my brother and I were over with my wife and his girlfriend at the time, visiting Switzerland, and we walked by this hut, and there was a sign saying, go climb with us. So we walked in, not really knowing much, being very green, and said, hey, can you take us climbing? And the guy said, sure, show up tomorrow morning, and that's what happened. We really had no gear. He gave us a few, you know, bring some stuff in case it gets cold, but he gave us crampons and ice axe and took us up to summit the Munch. It was a beautiful bluebird sunny day, and as we were on the summit, a couple of Swiss F-16s went flying by at eye level, and they gave us a little sideways fly-by salute. It was amazing. I'll never forget that experience as long as I live.
Awesome, awesome. So let's go back and talk about, because I've heard you, I think you were on Denali, is that right?
Yeah.
Denali, you've been on Aconcagua. We talked about that. And that's actually where you met Art, I believe.
The first climb we had together was on Denali. He was there with his son.
Right.
And yeah, that was kind of the first big one that I did. And it wasn't, you know, when I started, I thought, let's start easy, start slow, and do some fun ones. So I did some smaller ones in Canada and went down to Ecuador with a friend and did a couple of the volcanoes. And at no point did I think I'd get into the bigger guys. But the more you do, the more, a lot of us here are type A-focused people, and the more you want. So I decided it was time to raise the bar, and the guide said, sure, you're ready, give it a go. So I went to Denali, which was where I met that fine gentleman, Art Muir.
So what is it about mountain climbing for you? You know, I mean, people make different choices, taking the family to Hawaii, to the Grand Wailea, or to the Cayman Islands. It that really doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong here. But what is it about you that drives this obsession with not just Mount Everest, but just mountain climbing? What does that give you?
I guess for me, life is about balance, and it's important to balance family and spirituality and excellence and a little bit of personal fitness. So I think for me, climbing is just a passion that I've developed. I like athletic endurance type sports. I've been a marathoner, triathlete, and this to me is the ultimate. It's just something about it, the buzz of hanging out with people, having a goal, coming in prepared, and trying your best to make the summit.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's really interesting is every day you and I are now teammates, right, on this expedition, and people, I'm sure, could just hear the helicopter flying over. And so, you know, it's from people that have high altitude mountain sickness. For right now, we're sitting at 17,500 feet. I'm not exactly sure what the conversion is in meters.
It's about 5,600 meters.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it's between bringing in supplies, bringing in people. We actually had one gal from our group have to fly via helicopter yesterday back down to Kathmandu. So those things do happen. But getting back to that passion and that balance in life is something that's really interesting to me. And the thing about balance is that we're constantly being unbalanced, right?
Sure.
Because your kids have a soccer game, or you're being drawn into there's an emergency, you have to go and extract a tooth or something, right? And so what is it for you that helps you really balance those things? Because you're striving for that, but we're constantly being unbalanced.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I remember learning about the cross of life one time at a dental lecture, and you're never in the center. You want to be there as often as you can, and strive towards being in the middle. But yeah, we all get out of balance periodically. I think most mountain climbers will tell you that it is a selfish sport. So do it a little bit here and there, and try not to get carried away. But yeah, make sure it works with the family life and with work, your career, et cetera. I think it's important that we always strive to be somewhere as close to the middle as possible.
Yeah. Well, you certainly must have a supportive wife, right, to really understand that's what helps drive you and make probably a better relationship between you two by you being able to go out and accomplish these amazing feats.
Yeah, 100%. Often that's the thing that people marvel over the most is how did you convince your spouse to let you take 2 months off and come here and do this crazy thing? But
well, Art, we were just talking to him, and we both came to the conclusion that he outkicked his coverage. So, yeah. And I have no doubt that's probably the truth. So she must be a remarkable woman, both you two guys.
It's a give and take, like, yeah, any marriage for sure. So, no, I'm very lucky. Stacey's a wonderful lady and is very understanding and supportive, but I owe her big time when I get back, yeah.
Tell me about Mount Everest. Right. So at some point in time on the map, maybe it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, when those guys were coming off the Matterhorn, when was it for you that thing kicked in? And what is it when we actually get here amongst our peers that gives you the extra juice that makes you like, this was the right decision. I'm glad I'm here. And all these interesting people that happen to be within this group led by Garrett Madison.
Yeah. So I guess if you're a runner, you want to do the Boston Marathon. If you're a climber, you want to do Mount Everest. It just seemed like a logical progression. Really fortunate to be in the position now at 55 to be here and giving it a shot. And I've had a lot of time to think about it, prepare for it. And I've been looking forward to it like a kid at Christmas Eve for I guess 8 years now is when I finally put it in the schedule 8 years ago. And every couple of years I've knocked one off and ultimately would like to do the Seven Summits. As I understand that, Mark, you yourself will take care of in a month and a half or so.
Well, trying to, fingers crossed. There's a couple guys on here again. We'll mention Andrew Hughes. Both of us are trying to do both Everest and Lhotse. So we'll see how that all goes. You know, one of the things that that on today's podcast that I find so fascinating is the international effect. So you're representing, you know, Canada, our awesome neighbor to the north. And we just talked to Art. He and I are both from the U.S., but you know, we're going to talk to some people from some other countries today. But you know, what is it for you like when we come together? You know, you talked about being on Denali, being on Aconcagua, down in Ecuador. I think that's where you said you were climbing these different volcanoes. What is it about when you come together? You know, that helps like motivate or drive, or it's more interesting that people who don't climb don't really understand.
Right. Yeah, great question. The interactions, the people you meet is really the icing on the cake with mountaineering. I've always had great luck with wonderful team members and people from all over the world. Relationships that continue, you're in touch with people, you bump into them again. It's a fairly small community. And I don't think it's something that you can do by yourself. We all have good days, we all have bad days, and we all need a little support along the way to stay healthy and stay focused. And team support is so critical to this type of passion.
Yeah, and something that you mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, at the end of the day, climbing is a very individual sport because we're tethered really to the mountain, which is a little bit different than other mountains that we're. But you really do need to have that support. We all come together. You're right. We have good days. We have bad days. And we're feeling that right now, right? Some of us have had coughs. We call it the Kuma cough. Some of us have been feeling the altitude illness where you're just feeling punky and just not full of energy. And a lot of us are napping and that type of thing. But it sure helps when we come in this mess hall, this mess tent that they've erected for us. And somebody can say, great job today, or keep going, or something like that. I think that really gives a zap of energy, at least to me it does. I'm sure it does to you in some capacity.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's remarkable. We've only been together 3 weeks. The only person I knew in the team coming in was Art, and already I have 15 new friends. So
yeah,
no, it's a great crew.
And they're great people, right? Mm-hmm. And they come from all different perspectives, and people have done, you know, these different mountains. There's a gal, the one gal I knew in the group, Koki, who is here in the tent down the road. She was just the most amazing person to have on my team on Denali. And it was probably the most unexpected thing because at the end of the day, and just calling a spade, you know, nobody really wanted to be with the girl. And I got kind of stuck with her. And at the end of the day, I turned out to get the jewel.
There you go.
And so you just never know how these things, you know, emerge, right? Mm-hmm. So very cool in that way. So now we all plan for success. At least I do. I'm sure you do too.
100%.
Yeah. So do you see like continuing to go? Is this the pinnacle? Like you get to the top and you raise your hands in the air and jump off the you know, maybe down to China side and that's it? Or do you still have aspirations of continuing this journey?
I mean, Everest is a big goal. At this point, I'm putting all of my energy towards getting to the summit, hopefully in a couple of months. So I think I'll get there first, and then we'll reevaluate after that. But yeah, I guess I finishing the seven summits would probably be the next subcategory. But
and how many along are you? I know you're at least two. This would be three or four?
Everest will be the fourth one. My goal was to get the more difficult ones done while I was younger, and that will leave, I guess, Vincent Massif, Elbrus, and Gartens Pyramid.
Yeah. I did Kosciuszko in Australia.
Okay, well, that's on the list as well.
Well, that's where Dick Bastard was. Yeah, so I want to go with the original.
He was the first guy. He was the man.
Something you just said, which was interesting, which is my coaches in football used to always say, and we got burned on this too many times, so I really began, because people are asking me the same question, Mark, what's next? What's next? And what I like to say is it's one game at a time.
Sure.
Right, so it's foot after foot. Just concentrate on that particular goal. Back in 1983 or something like that, a long time ago, but we pretty much had the Rose Bowl wrapped up, playing at the University of Washington, and we just had to beat lowly Washington State. And so we were making plans to go down to Pasadena, and they came and had a big upset on us. And it was just a great lesson learned. Don't start thinking about the game, you know, that's a month away that you haven't even played. Just the only thing that matters in life is being present. And what's right in front of you, right?
100%.
And that's certainly going to apply in this case because it's going to take all of our efforts and pulling together in a very unique way to get us up and then back down in a very safe manner.
And I think the coach analogy is a great one. And here on the mountains, our guides, our very professional guides, keep us grounded, remind us every now and then. You know, we're asking all these questions, what are we doing tomorrow? And they're trying to say, just relax, guys, one day at a time. And they'll get us to the top.
So let's give our guide or guides, but we'll start with the top, Garrett Madison, a little pump here. What is it about Garrett that of all these different choices that you could have made that landed you in this group with this guide, with Garrett, putting that confidence in him that was going to get you to the top and back down safely?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to do an undertaking like Everest as you want to set yourself up for success. And in the small community of mountaineering, you do your homework, you ask around, and Garrett's name kept coming up. This is my first time working with Garrett, but man, what a gentleman. And he's just so calm and so professional. I feel like I've definitely made the right choice. He's the man.
So as you and I were out training today, Koki, I was standing next to her, and she was, if just for a minute, struggling with this one particular maneuver going up that ice wall, right? Which we all did. And Garrett was so patient with her and said all the right things. And she echoed back to him, Garrett, you have such a great bedside manner, right? Mm-hmm. Which is usually referred to doctors who are really good at patients who are terminal or something. And I think that's really right. I met Garrett down in Antarctica, and we happened to meet as I was going up this 1,100 foot ice wall, and he was going down the ice fall, and he looked at me and I looked at him, and through a kind of a wide, crazy roundabout story, I ended up guiding one of the rope teams, and he was like, who the hell is that guy? Right? Because all these guys know each other. And I started doing more and more in research, and we had a cheeseburger or something together. And then the next thing, you know, it all popped up and it all worked out. But I think he's one of the best. He knows his stuff. I've climbed with him a number of times over in Sun Valley, Idaho. This is my first time actually on a big expedition. And you have seen like these multiple moving parts. We have, 35 different Sherpa. Mm-hmm. We have four or five guides, all super on their game. All these cooks. I mean, everything that we've done just to get to this point, and we're still in the first quarter of it's just like falling into place, right?
For sure.
And so organization is key to so much structure that happens and success that follows.
100%. Yeah, there's a small army working behind the scenes diligently, and I'm sure we don't understand half of what's going on, but it's all been so smooth and so flawless so far.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. All right, buddy. Listen, thank you so much for jumping in and giving your perspective coming from Canada, Nova Scotia. And I know I'm going to be right with you on top when that day comes here on Mount Everest in a couple of weeks. So thank you for popping in.
Oh, happy to chat, Mark, anytime.
All right, buddy. Thank you. All right, we're back again. And this time we were very, very, very fortunate to have Kristen Haria, I said that right?
Almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
All the way.
But it's
from,
really hard to say.
It is hard to say. And the reason why it's hard to say is because you're Norwegian.
Yeah, but the name is actually Finnish. And the Norwegian people have a lot of trouble saying it right. So you were good.
That was good?
Yeah.
So say in Norwegian, how do you say your name?
Harila.
Harila. Okay, the whole thing. Kristen, is that how you start?
Kristen Harila.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So we call you the Norwegian queen of the group here, right? We've got a lot of different people that we're talking to. And the one thing that's so interesting, we've talked to Art Muir today. We just got done talking with Kevin. And so we've got the U.S., we've got Canada, Nova Scotia, and now we're talking to somebody from Norway.
Yeah.
So what was it like growing up in Norway? I've never talked to anybody who actually grew up in Norway.
It was cold.
How cold?
No, you know, I'm from the north of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the Arctic, and it's cold, and it's dark.
During the winter?
Yeah, and during the summer, it's light all day. But even in the summer, we don't have... it's like in a good summer day, it's 15 degrees.
Mm.
Yeah. If we are lucky, we have 20.
Yeah.
But that's not happening every year.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I were talking earlier, and one thing that Norway certainly stands out for is not only its chocolate, but these great Nordic skiers.
Yeah.
Right? And so is that something that when you were growing up that you experience, right, from the standpoint of everybody's doing it, that like maybe in the U.S. it's soccer or it's baseball or football, but you know, in Norway.
Yeah. I think I had skis on when I was one or something.
Wow.
And we was always out playing with the skis on. And that's really nice. So I did professional until 2009.
Yeah.
So, of course, I did a lot of skiing when I was young.
So is that mainly the traveling around the country of Norway doing that? Or are you going to all those countries?
Yeah, when I was starting competition, it was like maybe I was seven. And then it was like local.
Yeah.
But from I was 13, it was national.
Okay, so let's transition now into mountain climbing, right?
Yeah.
So I don't recall that there's a lot of gigantic mountains in Norway, but where did that passion, where did you get the bug, where did you get hooked?
I did my first high mountain in 2015. It was Kilimanjaro.
Mm-hmm.
But I always liked the mountains and liked to get to the summit and like getting to the goal and
But let's peel back the onion a little bit, right? So what was it? What was that moment that you said, I need to go climb a big mountain like Mount Kilimanjaro?
Kilimanjaro, it was, I did win a trip with the job that I had.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was a job trip. And if I didn't go, maybe I wouldn't have been here. Maybe. But when I did the Butcher East in 2019... and saw Everest. That was when I decided that I wanted to.
Well, so again, let's go back and talk with, you know, the previous two guests that were just on, Art, right, and Kevin. And, you know, they've got a little bit of a resume. And so most people don't go from Nordic skiing to Kilimanjaro in 2015. And a couple years later, like, hey, let's go do Everest. Right? So why would you, I mean, you look great when you're climbing, you look like you know what you're doing, so that's all good.
Yeah.
But what would that thing, like for me, I started with Kilimanjaro myself, right, in terms of big mountains. I've done a lot of other ones around the States.
Yeah.
But I wanted it to be a progression with Mount Everest and Lhotse being the very end. And not only are you doing Everest with the group, but with me and a few others, you're also going to go and take on Lhotse.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of going from little league to big time in one jump.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did Puutahinsuli in between. That was 7,246
meters.
And, and Aconcagua. So that I did in between. But I also did like many technical mountains in Norway also the last years. Since I quit my job, I have just been out traveling and climbing mountains.
Life is wonderful for you. But I know that you're also out there milking cows, you know, from here and there, right?
Yeah.
And that's what people do in Norway, right?
Yeah.
Eat chocolate, milk cows, and go out to Nordic skiing.
Yeah. Really romantic.
Yeah. So I've asked the same question to the other two. I want to ask it to you, right? Which is, what is it about the international community? We've got a couple new additions to the group from the UK, right? We've got, I'm looking down the table, we've got some other US, we've got Canada.
Yeah.
You know, you're from Norway, and we're going to talk to another person from Ireland, right? So what is it about the international flair the connection.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that, I think it's really, so nice.
Yeah, why?
To meet.
Why?
Yeah, to meet different people and yeah. meet other culture. Even we are like Norway and US are not so different, but we also are different. And it's nice to get to know other people from other countries and to see. And I have been traveling most of these trips alone, and I love it. And to meet and get to know other people from other countries.
But
and
tell me why that is, because I think, you know, one of the things, at least the lesson I've learned, is about stepping into the fear, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, originally, stepping into the fear was I flew all the way to Arusha, Tanzania, and I mm-hmm. climbed, right? And you go through all that.
Yeah.
And so going through customs and everything else in Kenya, and it's chaos, and then, yeah. you know, moving on and flying, and some dude in the middle of the night picking me up and taking me to some spot with machine guns standing out outside of the gates.
Yeah.
It's scary for a lot of people, right? And
yeah.
so, but I'm trying to have you address all the people that are listening, and they've always thought about doing this, but they don't have the right, it's not the right time, or they're not in the right relationship, or they're scared to yeah. step into the fear to go yeah. do something grand like this.
Yeah.
And try to take somebody across the threshold of what happens when you land in a group like this, and all of a sudden you've got like 15 to 20 new best friends.
Yeah. But most of people are nice, and people want to be nice. And like, I have traveled all the world alone, and I'm never afraid. I haven't been that at all, because it's so unnormal that people are not nice. Most of the people that you meet when you're out, they are really nice people.
So people are people, is what
yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah.
And that politics
and
are,
them,
that's where things get all messed up, right?
Yeah, and people are like afraid of meeting new people and afraid of new culture, and that they will be different or maybe scary. But that doesn't happen very often. Most of the time you meet nice people and kind people, and people mm-hmm. want to be that.
And be helpful.
Yeah. So how often do you go out and meet people that are rapers or killers? Or it's not very often. Most yeah. of the time you meet nice people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have to watch out for Art over there. He might slip into our tent some night, right? But no, I think you're right. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you do your best to do the research and find the right guide
yeah.
that fits your style,
yeah, of
right?
course.
And, you know, we are all in this group now with Madison Mountaineering.
Yeah.
And, again, you come from an international community.
Mm.
And how did you, in the crazy world, end up landing on Madison Mountaineering with Garrett?
I talked to Garrett last summer about it. And actually, I met him in Kathmandu in 2019. Mm. He was finished with his trip, and we was finished with R. And we just said hello to him, because the guy that I had then knew him and was talking a little bit. And then after we did this Lubutse East, I was starting to think about Everest. So then we was getting in contact, and we talked last summer about Everest
yeah.
this season. And I didn't believe it would happen.
So wait a minute. So you talked to him in 2019, and was your plan to come
yeah.
again in 2020?
Yeah, I talked to him in summer 2020 also about going this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, because 2020 was so close. We knew that then. This was June, I think.
Mm. Mm.
And then I was talking again with him in January this year, and I was like, oh, I don't think it would be, but I hope. You know, Norway is like really strict about traveling.
Mm.
So I have been feeling a little bit bad about traveling.
So did you sneak out of the country, or what did you do?
I felt like a criminal, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. And also in the airport, the police was stopping me and asking, what are you going to do? And I was like, ooh, what am I doing?
Wow.
Yeah. But
so you truly are a mountain gangster over
I
here.
I feel like a little yeah. bit, but now it's okay. I think I left that in Kathmandu. So, and for me, it was like, if I'm going to do this, I feel like I have to do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So do I.
Yeah.
So this episode is coming down the 1st of May, right? So we're now talking in mid-April.
Yeah.
So we've already been together a couple of weeks, right? And we still have a couple more before this comes out. And what are you hoping at this point? We're at 17,500 feet, and we're going to start going through the Kumba ice field. And it's intimidating, it's scary and everything else. But what do you hope, you know, in the next couple of weeks to gain in terms of confidence, skills, whatever that might be for you?
Yeah, I hope that we can work together as a team. And I think after the movie we saw last night, I think we all know how important it is.
So the movie we saw last night, which, by the way, you picked out, was the K2 death story.
Yeah, from 2008. And we saw so many things that went wrong that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know, everybody here, that we have to help each other and we have to stay together and be strong together.
Yeah. And in that movie, by the way, for those who have not seen it, it is the ultimate example of not working together, not coming together as a team, everybody pulling in their own direction. And at the end of the day, it caused 11 lives.
Yeah. It was
tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go on the flip side of that and the positive. And let's take what you just said, which is all about teamwork, right?
It is. It is. And we are a big group and we have to help each other up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the only way to get it.
Well, being the Queen of Norway, you might be carried up there in some kind of a big cart or something. So that'd be very easy.
You.
Yeah, do a toboggan down, right? Well, good. Okay, so we are all connected right now, right? We're going to be traveling up, and it's a very exciting time right now. So far, we've had fantastic weather.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed that we continue to be that way.
Yeah.
Right. And it actually warms up and doesn't continue to be as cold as it's been. But I think we're on the right track with the right people, with the right team. And again, it's really interesting how none of us knew each other. Now we come in from all these different countries, Norway, UK, Britain, you know, the US and other places, and really have this bond that's been formed.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and I look forward to standing on top and lifting you in the air and, you know, high-fiving, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so what I want you to do is say something wonderful in Norwegian so you can prove that you're actually, like, goodbye or farewell or whatever you want to say, but say something very eloquent.
Okay. Lykke til på fjellet, på Mount Everest og Lhotse. Du kommer til å klare deg kjempebra.
And as her interpreter, that means I'm going to bring lots of chocolate to the top of Mount Everest and Lhotse.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Okay. We've got another person up on deck. She just arrived into camp a couple of days ago. She's on a different yet connected trip going up Mount Everest. Her name is Bex Ferry. Bex, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How
and
are you?
Tell me where you come from.
I come from Oxford in the UK. So a really nice city, quite close to London, quite famous for the university, and not very famous for its mountains.
Yeah, I know it's not very famous for its mountains. And, you know, you've got this interesting career because you're a mom of two. You have this amazing profession as a lawyer.
I actually have 5 children.
You have 5 children?
I do have 5 children.
So you just piled another 3 on from last night.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I want to speak right now to all the moms that are out there.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, they go off to school. You're highly educated at Cambridge, right?
Yep, that's right.
And you became a lawyer and you're doing these amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get married and you have 5 kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes people become irrelevant because they haven't been in the workforce for a long time.
Yeah, I see that.
Yep. And so what you've done is kind of reinvented yourself in some level.
Uh-huh.
And you have, you know, been climbing these crazy mountains, and now you find yourself, you know, with John Gupa, your mountain guide.
Yep.
It's kind of a unique situation because it's kind of, you're doing a one-on-one with him, but you're connected.
Yeah, we're part of Madison as well, so we're sort of all independent, but with you guys as well, so.
So let's go back and let's ask the question, which is the obvious question, is how does a mom of 5, right, in this big career, go from doing that to mountain climbing? And it's just not trivial. this isn't just any mountain. This is the biggest mountain in the world.
Yeah. I guess I've always, I have always been outdoorsy, active, grew up in the north of England with a very active family, particular father who would take me off to Scotland in all weathers, eaten alive by midges and hanging out at camping in snow. So being outside has always been a massive part of who I am. I've also run a lot, and the running has always taken me sort of to many places in the world as well. So even though I've had five children, I've always been outside and active and maintained that throughout working and pregnancy, which I think is really important. Like, I've never let that side of me go. And for my children, I think it's been really invaluable for them to see that as you get older, you still can have dreams and you can still fulfill them as well. And otherwise, you know, you're saying to them, go get a good education and then go to work and then life stops. So it doesn't. I think it's you can still do anything you want to. Just because you're a mum doesn't mean to say that you have to get lost in the domestic chores of children. And, you know, I love my kids and they're the most important thing to me ever. And I know that they're really proud that I'm here. So, yeah, it'd be awesome to get to the summit and make them
proud. No, I love that. Breaking that down just a little bit. So you're talking about the adventure travel part of it, right?
Yeah.
Of going around, I don't know if you've been exactly, but when you're running and things like that. Mm-hmm. And at what point in time did you transition into, I'm running, maybe you still are as training, but to, I want to start doing bigger challenges, you know, going straight up mountains?
Actually, quite recently, this has been a relatively new phenomenon for me. And literally probably last year, I climbed Amadablam and did a bit of training with John in Wales and started to try and make a transition from running in mountains to trying to climb in mountains. So I start from a base of nothing. I have everything to learn, but that's part of the enjoyment and the process is learning new things and meeting new people and having a go. And I don't feel... I know that this is Everest is a massive undertaking and something that someone trains for years and years, but I come at it from a slightly different approach that I kind of feel that maybe endurance and something else and mental tenacity and physical endurance just from stuff that's happened in life and how you live is maybe also quite important as well, and sort of not to feel overwhelmed by the mountain and just enjoy the process. For me, it's very much a journey and I look at it different. I guess it's not all about the summit. Obviously, I really want to get to the summit, but it's part of everything, really. The process, the journey, the people you meet, the hardships, the things that go wrong. I think you learn more from the failings than you do from the actual successes. So, yeah, it's quite extraordinary to be here.
Well, you know, again, I want to remind everybody the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And the finding your summit part is very metaphorical, right?
Yeah.
So it's we all go through 10 things in life. That's just life. And if you haven't been through it, you're going to have it, you know, hit you at any moment. And then the other thing that you're talking about is the process. It's not all about, you know, raising your hand at the top of the summit. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Something that's really influenced me is there's a famous basketball coach in the States many years ago. He's since passed, named John Wooden. He created this thing called the Pyramid of Success. Uh-huh. And so essentially that was 25 individual building blocks of team and again, individual goals that you put all together. And at the very top, there's a word he used called competitive greatness,
mm-hmm.
right? And that could be winning the championship or standing on top of the mountain or becoming a lawyer from Cambridge and doing...
Yeah.
Great stuff. It doesn't matter what that is, but at the end of the day, what to me that word competitive greatness is all about loving the process.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You don't love the process, you don't love being here, you don't love being in the camaraderie with all these great people here, you'll never make it to the top.
Absolutely.
And this is where time and again, 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 you know, cut and paste in terms of following that same model that has gotten me to great places.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's always the small things. It's not the big things. It's every small detail adds up to make the bigger picture and the process as well. And, you know, you skip the small things and you won't reach the summit or you won't enjoy your time here. So it's, that great competitive edge, I agree, is really important.
And what have you learned about, again, we're talking, you know, with these cool British people and... Then we've got Americans, and we've got Irish, and we just talked to Norwegian, gal and that type of thing. We're just all getting to know each other. But what do you, like, again, going back and teaching valuable lessons to your children, what is that magic, that thing, right, that when you come in, that part of, part of this thing is about achievement and about mm-hmm. loving the process, yeah. but there's another component, maybe it's the human element.
Yeah.
of coming together in this international community to do one great thing in common.
I think it's compassion for others and to, put others as equal as yourselves and to help, like, Kristen was just saying, it's camaraderie and compassion and caring and just looking after each other as well, and not, there's no I in team. It's, you might stand on the summit on your own, but actually there's a whole conglomerate of different things that have actually put you up there. And for me, it's, the people, it's my family, my kids, my friends. It's part of that bigger picture. And that's what I think I take away from it. It's like, it's so important to, meet other people and respect other people's cultures and have compassion and be kind and humble. Definitely be humble. And I think the mountains are a very kind of leveling playing field for that. You sort of, they strip you right back and they, they show other people who you are exactly, warts and all. There's no hiding. And, if you come with an ego or if you come with any kind of different agenda, then I think it, you'll get found out. And for me, it's quite a humbling, and I find it a really peaceful place to be, even if the weather's terrible and, it's freezing cold. I just love being in the mountains and pottering around. And we've been in the ice wall today, and it's like a different world. It's so ethereal and it's otherworldly, and that is quite transportative, and I love it. Yeah.
You should be a coach. You're seeing a lot of things that my coaches have said in the past, and for somebody who hasn't had a lot of experience in the mountains. And by the way, when you talked about Alma de Blom, for anybody who's seen the Matterhorn, it's pretty much that, a big snow cone straight up.
It's quite steep.
And again, for somebody who hasn't done a lot of mountain climbing, that's really remarkable that you took that on. And I think the other thing, you said this about 5 minutes ago, which was really interesting to me, which was just about the role model leadership. Koki's here in the group too, and she actually brought her daughter all the way along,
nice.
On the trekking, 2 weeks. And, I could just see the bond and the confidence in her and how proud she was with her, about her mom. And I can only imagine, I've got two daughters, and they're rooting me on, and they're very proud. But, everybody's scared because you're not going to come back. I'm like, I can 100% tell you I'm coming back. So let's get over that and get more into the supportive role of how this is all going to play out. And, you got to picture success, right, on you standing on top of the mountain. Or, it's, visualization is so
Definitely.
Key to success.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. Like, I, having been in the ice wall today, I feel really excited to get going, having a go and doing the rotations and trying to get to the summit as well. And I can completely, as much as I was saying, it's a process and a journey, I can see myself on the summit, and I think that's really exciting. But it's the process and the journey of getting there as well, all the small components, which I love, the kind of early mornings, the cold, all the other bits and pieces.
Like the mountain shower.
Like the mountain shower, the shower in the bucket. Yeah.
Right.
Who knew a shower in a bucket could be so rejuvenating?
Shower in a bucket is the way to go. Listen, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your insights all the way from the UK. Yeah, no, of course, it's spontaneous here, but that's what this group is all about. And I feel like we have a really strong, solid group that's going to do great things. And we're all going to be proud of each other and look forward to celebrating back in Kathmandu.
For sure.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right on. All right, our final guest of the day is Ronan Murphy, all the way from Ireland. How you doing, buddy?
Fantastic, buddy. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, you're looking good. You're looking good. You finally showered, which we're all very grateful for, here on the tent showers at 17,500 feet, converted to something else in meters. But
God knows what that is.
It's one of the things we've been talking about in terms of when we go and we do these amazing events, and obviously we're here at Mount Everest, so it's the biggest, baddest boy on the block, but really about the international community. We've talked to Kevin from Canada, just talked to Bex from the UK, America, and other places. And So it's just always very fascinating that as the world is like seems like it's falling apart with all this political bullshit, when we come together as people, we come together as one. And we've seen
totally
this.
Agree.
Yeah, we've seen this so far. So I just want to get your opinion about like these other adventures that you've been on, and you've taken some different sabbaticals, you know, in your time, about what you've learned. You know, we talked about the other day that there was a point in time when you went to Santa Barbara, the college, for 6 months or so. Good time in your life. But
Great times.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, what is that for you about, you know, the human interest part? Not forget about the climbing part of it for a minute, just the human interest part of it.
Well, for me, it's just meeting people, right, and doing different things around the world, seeing the world, new cultures, new people, how do you interact with people, you know, coming, throwing yourself into an environment where, you know, you're coming, meeting different nationalities, like myself being the only, I thought I was going to be the only European here, but unfortunately not. There's a few Europeans.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. Just getting to see the world and do different things.
Yeah.
You know, that's the main driver for it.
And I've been to Ireland, right? Mm-hmm. Loved the country, golfed all over. And I didn't see a lot of tall mountains when I was there. There's a lot of bluffs.
There's hills.
They're hills, right? They go up and down and all over.
Yeah.
But for you, where did you get that bug that you wanted to take on this challenge? You're very strong, one of the stronger guys of the group. And so you certainly have that drive and that thing that makes your motor want to really tick and go. But it's one thing to tick and go on a flat surface, and it's another thing to tick and go straight up.
Yeah, for me, look, for mountaineering, for me, it was just an escapism. You know, when I went down to South America, I spent a whole year climbing mountains in the Andes. And just the drive of, you know, being on your own in your own headspace and getting to see amazing scenery, that was what drove it for me. That's what the hook was for me. And I've been just doing it ever since. And it's a bit of a, you know, solo. It's a solo endeavor, isn't it? And it's one where, you know, I think everybody that does this and is doing Everest has their own reasons for doing it and what's your internal drive. And for me, it was something I always wanted to do it. And it was always going to happen. It was just a matter of when. And then fitting it in with your life and how you can get it done, it was really, that's what it is for me. So now is like the perfect time.
So I know Ireland is connected to the UK a little bit, and certainly Sir Edmund Hillary in Tenzing, Norway. Were those guys influences of you as a young lad in terms of your drive someday? I mean, certainly there's kind of a trickle-down effect from Jim Whittaker and Lew Whittaker, both from the great state of Washington. And Jim was the first American to climb, I think it was 1963 or something, when he made it to the top of Everest. So it was a huge feat, but certainly he wasn't the first.
Yeah, well, look, everybody knows about Hillary, right? Like, I'm actually climbing on behalf of his charity at the moment, the Himalayan Trust. So yeah, he was a big legend at the time. I think, look, you know, Norgay, everyone knows about him as well. Over the years, where did the drive come and the inspiration? I suppose I looked at some of the Irish climbers. We were watching something last night on K2, and Jerry MacDonald there. And then just there's other legends around the world that you followed, and you know that can inspire you to push on to do great things in terms of climbing. And there's lots of people that were here climbing at the moment that are you know pretty amazing what they've done in the past.
But, So we earlier on this podcast, we talked to Kristen, as you and I call her, the Norwegian Queen, right? And she was talking about that she's done majority of her travel independently, and she's taken on. And so that kind of led into stepping into the fear. So I want to go back to, you know, you wandering around in South America, climbing in the Andes and things like that. Like, what are some of those lessons? So I, and as you say this, I want you to think consciously about a lot of people out there that listen to this podcast, Finding Your Summit, and for them, finding their summit, you may be finding your own summit. And what are those valuable lessons that if they're on the fence, what are those things that, you know, stepping into the fear, chasing it down, going after something, taking it from a dream to a reality? What, you know, what has that been for you and kind of the self-fulfillment part of that has really given back and made you a better person?
Yeah, massively. Look, I think for anyone, especially from the last year, if you think we've all been in lockdown, it's the drive to a goal, to trying to achieve something big. And I think for me, from my perspective, traveling was always a huge thing for me. So I've been around the world to a lot of remote places and just loved the drive from that and the inspiration you get from doing that. And then from a personal perspective, you know, getting yourself into condition, getting yourself ready for something like this is huge. And it's something I've done all through my life. you know, and I think they spent the last year, you know, working really hard towards this. And it was a goal that everybody that is involved in doing this has had the similar type of, you know, goals to work towards when everyone else is stuck in lockdown and we're getting ready for this. And that's what I think is inspired me to you know, get myself ready in terms of what we're doing and getting away from the lockdown that everyone else is in right now. So it's from that perspective, it's been huge.
And what do big goals do for you? I mean, for me, it started 10 years ago about trying to become the first NFL player to climb the 7 summits, right? And, you know, I'm very close to making that all happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you know, talk about motivated when you want to pull that comforter up under your chin and go, you know, back to sleep or whatever. But you go, no, I got to get up. I got to get on the Peloton. I have to run up the mountain.
Yeah.
What does a big goal do for you?
That's a great question. I think like every single day when you get out of bed, it's just what your own personal drive is. And for me, my personal drive is to get things done straight away. You have the internal goals that you want to achieve and you want to, you know, achieve for yourself. And, you know, you talk about hitting 7 summits. That's something that I never even thought about doing before. I just love doing mountaineering and just climbed around the world and just climbed different mountains. But then you have these other goals that you end up thinking that maybe you'd like to hit. And I think, you know, that's something that's interesting me. But just in terms of just every day and looking after yourself and just trying to be the best version of yourself is what's driven me forward for this. And that's, it's quite simple from that perspective.
And last question for you, and I've asked this question to everybody else. We're here as a kind of an international community, but how did you pick Garrett Madison, Madison Mountaineering, to make this dream become a reality?
So Kent and Kill, the guys, friends here, I got in touch with him. So I've obviously living in the UK, as I do, I've been following Kenton's career for quite a few years. I always said I was going to try and climb with something related to him or another Nepalese company that I've climbed here with before. Got in touch with Kenton about climbing at the Matterhorn actually in last year, but then of course with lockdown couldn't do it. Spoke to him about his company and then we just got on well, the two of us, and then we chatted quite a bit last year, and then he introduced me to Garrett and got in touch with Garrett, and the three of us had a conference call, which was quite funny because Garrett was in Africa, I was in Positano, and Kenton was somewhere random as well. And the three of us had this three-way conference call, which was quite funny.
Yeah. So by the way, if everybody doesn't know, Kenton Cool sounds like a superhero, but he's actually not. He's actually a real person who's done some incredible things. He is going to be on the pod here in a couple of weeks. But certainly a big influence in the climbing, mountaineering world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, listen, especially coming from the UK, look, you know, we don't want to blow Kenton's trumpet here, but he's been up Mountain Everest 14 times.
Yeah.
So obviously, very big personality in the UK, and that's why I got in touch with him. And it was great getting in touch with him because it opened the door to so many things, and it's just simply putting a phone call in. Yeah. That's all it was.
Love it, love it, love it. Well, listen, what we want to do is get to the top and back down safely, and
that's
then we can
it.
Put that call into whoever you want to put that call into. But it's all the hard work, the dedication, coming together as a team, working together in an international way. It's been awesome getting to know you and the others so far. We've been at this 2 weeks. This episode is going to run on the 1st of May. And, you know, by that time, we're going to be even further down the train tracks in terms of our progress, going up and down the Kumba Ice Field, the Camp 1, Camp 2, maybe touching Camp 3. So there's a lot of ground still to cover.
Yeah, like I feel like we haven't even done anything yet.
Yeah.
Well, we've been trekking in. We've been having some banter. But it's been fun. Nothing started for me. Mentally, it all starts in a few days' time. And even then, it almost feels like it's not real because we've been in training, whatever. Once we get into the ice falling, get going, it will be real. And I think, you know, then let's see where we are in 4 weeks' time, because it's, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, yeah, between now and when we're actually done, or well, let's call it, if we're lucky, 4 weeks. So it's ready to go, basically.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on. One, two is it's so far it's been an absolute thrill to get to know you. You know, another friend gotten to know from all these different expeditions all around the world. And number three, look forward to being on top with you, you know, raising our hand in the air and making it back down safely.
100%.
All right,
cheers,
all right, everybody.
Thank
here
you very
he
much.
Is. The one, the only, Ronan Murphy. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.